Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Gabaza, and for today, we're going to be getting into a conversation, around something that many of us have faced or experienced at one point or another, that is the direct marketing calls, where you see a mysterious number popping up on your phone, and someone is calling to advertise or to try to sell you one thing or another. In my case, a lot of it tends to be a lot of financial services, especially insurance. But this thing happens, across the board for many different products and services. So for today, we're going to be chatting, with the team from Baker McKenzie. They are one of the big law firms, just to understand some of the amendments that are going to be coming to local laws to actually help us as consumers to reduce some of that is going on. And to make sense of it all, we are joined by an expert. We are joined by Ashton Perimo. He is a partner at Baker McKenzie, and he's going to be giving us an understanding of what's going on. He is a partner in the mergers and acquisitions department at Baker McKenzie South Africa. So, let's get into it. Ashton, greetings to you today.
Hi, Madiwa. Thank you very much for having me and looking forward to the conversation.
All right. So, I've already described the situation. I've received these calls many a time. And nowadays, we even have specialist apps and software. And I've even noticed that even my bank, offers a screening, as part of the app where it can even monitor who's calling you and all of that stuff for these types of things. So what's actually happening in this space and what can we expect going forward?
Thank you so much, Madiwa. So it's quite an interesting time in South Africa when it comes to direct marketing and telemarketing. I think over the last year, there's been a notable uptick in the amount of direct marketing, especially through telemarketing practices many individuals in the country have experienced. And so much so that the information regulator, well, that's the regulator that looks after our privacy law in South Africa, the Protection of Personal Information Act, that regulator has been inundated with complaints and issues from consumers and from data subjects in South Africa about direct marketing practices. Now, you mentioned earlier that some of us have apps, these caller ID apps. Well, some of those apps release some of their data. And from what we can tell from published information, the uptick is about 80% over the last couple of years, in respect of the amount and quantity of calls that individuals are receiving. So it's become a pretty stark issue. The regulators have been trying to address this through our privacy laws, and we can chat in a minute as to what sort of issues and conundrums they're encountering on that front. But what we wanted to mention that's happened in the last month, in October, is another regulator, essentially our consumer regulator, the National Consumer Commission. The body has published some draft amendments to our Consumer Protection Act regulations. Now, these are the regulations under the piece of legislation that protects consumers and ensures consumer fairness and a fair market for consumers in South Africa. Well, these amendments are looking to directly tackle this issue of telemarketing and direct marketing. And what it does is it aims to strengthen consumer privacy by establishing what is called an opt-out registry that will be managed by the National Consumer Commission. Now, this opt-out registry does two things in respect of consumers, firstly, and then direct marketers, secondly. For consumers, so that's the likes of you and me, Madiwa, is they can now register their details on this opt-out registry, essentially creating a preemptive block by submitting information like their email addresses, telephone numbers, et cetera. And there's no charge for this. This is completely free. As per the Consumer Protection Act, this is essentially a enforcement of a right available to consumers under the Consumer Protection Act. And then what this means for direct marketers, so this would be the likes of the companies that call you and use your information to market or to try and sell your products by telephone or otherwise, they would need to themselves register annually with the NCC and complete an electronic form whereby they'd submit information about themselves so that they can be identified and so that you know who they are when they're calling you. And they'll also need to ensure that in their actual direct marketing material, so within the calls or emails or the like, that they are properly identifiable and using the same details and same information that they've registered with the NCC. And then most importantly, they have to do two things. Firstly, they have to monthly audit their accounts, their records rather, and remove any details of an individual who has registered their information on the opt-out registry. And secondly, they're not allowed to contact you if you put your details on the opt-out registry. So what this is doing is it's handing a lot of the control in a preemptive way back to the consumers, back to the likes of yourself and myself.
Ashlyn, I do need to ask, with everything that you've just described, right, especially the opt-out part, the fact that there's an opt-out register to begin with, someone, you know, who's doing a little bit of, you know, backtrailing here would say to themselves, okay, I'm now signing up for an opt-out registry, but did I ever opt in to anything, you know? Maybe as a point of education, we can get an understanding to say when direct marketers get in touch with ordinary people, with consumers, where are these contact details coming from? Are people perhaps involuntarily opting into being contacted by these companies? You know, is it perhaps information that is being brokered and sold on to direct marketers from somewhere else that allows them to get in touch? As I said, as a point of education, maybe we can get into when the opting in is actually happening.
Of course. And ultimately, I would think that these are originating from three sources. The first is, unfortunately, not everybody reads the T's and C's when they're entering into a new contract, buying a new product or otherwise. And often these T's and C's will either include checkboxes or information, whether properly designed and in line with the law or not. And in terms of those terms and conditions, we're often unbeknownst to us opting in and providing our information either for use by the relevant company or organization providing us with the service or for them to be able to on-sell it to their partners and affiliates. Now, I think a lot of us have gotten a bit more savvy with that. So I personally make an effort to always opt out and not check the box, or also to try and check where I can and where I have the time, the T's and C's that are applicable to me when I'm entering into any agreement for services. The problem is that a lot of my information and your information is already available on public sources. So, for example, information can be scraped from the internet, from social media sites. If you're in the professional services industry and if you've got contact details on your company's website, those can be scraped. And there's various companies who do that kind of data gathering and create records of you that can be sold onto these sort of marketing companies. And last but not least, sometimes this information is honestly just illegally shared. So information that is gathered is essentially shared or unsold into central databases where companies can go and access this information, even though it's not compliant with our law. Now, what does the law say about this prior to these amendments? Well, we have the Protection of Personal Information Act, the privacy law and data protection law that I mentioned earlier. And under that act, under Section 69, we all have a right not to be direct marketed to unless our consent has been obtained or if there's a prior existing relationship with the company in question. So, for example, if you're a customer of that company already. So essentially, we already have a right to opt in to direct marketing, and we cannot be assumed to have opted in and thereby have to now opt out. However, and this is where it gets a little tricky prior to the amendments that are happening now, the Personal Protection Information Act allows a person to contact you once in order to ask you for consent as to whether you can be direct marketed to. So what that means is there's an allowance for one call to you to actually get you to opt in. And this is problematic. It's problematic for a number of reasons. Personally, and I don't know how you feel, I cannot be fielding calls all day and opting out and opting out. It takes too much time out of my day. I receive at least 6 to 7 direct marketing calls per day if it's not blocked by my caller ID service provider. So this is a problem in terms of how this works. And then secondly, quite honestly, even though I opt out when I get that first call, very often I still receive calls from those same companies. So there's not a clear observance of the requirement that once you've gotten that first phone call and the person has essentially denied their consent, you're not supposed to contact them again. So I think in a nutshell, it's a blend of perhaps legally available data that perhaps we need to be a bit more careful about when we share, and then illegally obtained data, which quite honestly, the idea is that these sort of regulatory amendments hopefully will address in future.
You know what, Ashlyn, what you're talking about, it resonates quite a bit because there's a lot of platforms that, you know, sneakily make you opt into certain things. I think at the beginning you mentioned the fact that a lot of the times people are agreeing to T's and C's that they aren't, you know, fully aware of, because most of the time T's and C's are so long, so you don't, you know, fully know that piece. But on the other side, the opting in and out of things is always, you know, such a tricky thing, right? I've noticed it even, you know, outside of direct marketing, one of the mobile operator that I use, I'm not shy to put them on blast because it's very annoying. They have a lot of services that they offer, like, you know, ringtones and little games and all of this stuff. But after you've chosen to opt out of everything, you know, you find yourself still having been subscribed to, you know, something. So opting out of things, it seems as if, you know, it's very tough. And on that point, one of the things that I was keen to get your sense on is, as an expert and as someone who watches this space and has probably been following developments, I tend to look at things from a point of incentives, right? In economics, we talk about the fact that economic actors work in their self-interest, right? So from an incentives point of view, I'm just wondering to say, what is the incentive for this legislation to actually dissuade this type of activity? Because the direct marketing companies have an incentive to market to you and I. At the same time, you have companies sitting behind those direct marketing companies that want those direct marketing companies to go out and find you and I, right? So I feel like the incentives are going to be a big, big piece of this. And, you know, in the equation, one person is going to have a bigger will than the other person.
No, absolutely. And perhaps if I could touch on one aspect of where the incentive is coming from, because there's an interesting story behind the journey towards these amendments. Part of the incentive from a government perspective as to why these amendments are being proposed now is because the legislature and the regulator under our privacy laws has been struggling with this issue. So since the information regulator was established, one of the areas where they receive a tremendous amount of complaints, and it occupies a large amount of time, is in respect of direct marketing practices. Now, there's a problem in that regard because there's arguably, and you'll, if you ask the telemarketers, you'll get one answer, and if you ask the information regulator, you'll get a different answer. Arguably, there is a loophole in our privacy laws when it comes to direct marketing via telephone, essentially telemarketing practices. And that loophole sits around the definition of electronic communication. So just to get technical for 2 seconds, under the Section 69 of the Protection of Personal Information Act. That's essentially the privacy pillar in our country, which looks after or protects us from direct marketing. Under that pillar, those rights are only enforceable with the view to preventing direct marketing through electronic communication. Now, this is where the issue arises. Under POPI, electronic communication, it needs to be capable of storage in a network or the recipient's terminal equipment, essentially your cell phone, until the recipient, i.e. you, collects it. Now, that's looking really at SMS-type messages, email-type messages, some sort of message that is capable of retrieval, not really a message that is communicated via telephones, essentially a mobile phone call. Telemarketers have argued that this, therefore, these direct marketing provisions don't apply to telephone marketing and have used that loophole for the longest time. Now, earlier this year, in February, the information regulator, again, the body that looks after this pillar of privacy protection, they said that, hang on, we need to draw a line in the sand. So we are going to indicate to market that our interpretation is electronic communication includes telemarketing. So they're saying that all of these protections under our privacy law definitely do apply to marketing via telephone calls, and essentially try to close that loophole from being available to telemarketers. The problem is that the information regulator can't legislate via guidelines or via these notices. Unfortunately, we are stuck with the law as it is made, and it is likely that once we see a compliance notice being issued on these issues, that we're going to see some sort of a court challenge under the privacy laws to dispute whether this is a proper interpretation of that act. However, and now I'm going to look at the other pillar. This is the 1-2 punch that I think government is looking for to achieve this. And this is where the incentive, I think, comes from for these amendments. And that is that under our Consumer Protection Act, a completely different piece of legislation that also looks after direct marketing, their electronic communication definitely is defined to include telephone calls. So there's no doubt about whether or not it would apply to a telephone call. The problem was, since 2008, since the Act actually was promulgated, we haven't had the do not call register, this opt-out register created in terms of the Act. So the Act already provides for it, but we've had a long, long period where we've been waiting for the registry to actually be created. I think that part of the incentive in creating it now is because of the struggles that the other regulators having in the privacy sphere. The benefit of the do not call register is it essentially firstly includes telephone calls quite clearly and without any ambiguity. And secondly is preemptive in nature, i.e. it's not of a nature where a person has to wait until consent has been obtained. It is immediate that the onus now shifts essentially to the telemarketer to go and check the do not call register and ascertain whether their information is in line with that register. So I think some of the incentive to your question, Mudiwa, is that I think the regulator struggled with another act and with another pillar and is now trying a different approach and trying to nip this in the bud using our consumer protection laws.
Maybe sticking with the incentives, Ashlyn, if we switch over to the other side of that equation, we understand, I guess, the incentive on the side of, the policymakers and the regulators. You know, this is probably the most complained about issue, like what you said. But if we then shift over to the other side, the perpetrators, who are the direct and telemarketers themselves, right? When it comes to incentives not to do this, I understand that there are, I don't know what word to use, let's call them punishments, right? That there are penalties that will come that have been proposed if a person or if an organization violates, some of these, new proposals that may be coming onto line. For me, there's two quick ones. Firstly, maybe if you can just take us through what the penalties are and how they work. And then secondly, who is likely to be liable, you know, when it comes to the penalties? Could you then go back? Let's say, for example, there's an office building somewhere and they're selling the contact information that's come through a year's worth of their signing books at the front office or at reception onto. I'm just using a very out there example, but maybe there's an office building somewhere and they have one of those signing in books that people usually have to fill in, and maybe they've filled up 100 of these books with people's contact information, and then they've sold that on to direct marketers. Could I go back and, you know, penalize that office building and say, hey, why did these people sell that information on to, I guess, these people? The direct marketers, sure, but the people from whom the information originated, is there any relief that's possible on that front?
Absolutely. So to touch on your first question on the enforcement under the Do Not Call register. So say, for example, you've registered your details on that registry, and regardless, the telemarketer has contacted you. What you're able to do as a consumer is you can file a complaint using a updated complaint form that is provided with these regulatory amendments. Now, when you are making that complaint, the NCC is able to issue a compliance notice against the offending direct marketer. In that compliance notice, they will outline the steps that need to be taken, and they will indicate what penalty the NCC believes is appropriate if the direct marketer does not take those steps, essentially does not comply with the compliance notice. Now, these penalties can vary. What's available to the NCC is they could charge 10% of your annual turnover or up to 1 million rand as a fine, imprisonment of up to 12 months, or a blend of both, so a fine or imprisonment. So they do have a bit of a stick to use to bring about compliance in respect of this legislation. However, this really only applies to a person who's actually engaged in the direct marketing, i.e. the organization that's actually approached you by mail or telephone for the purposes of supplying or offering for supply goods to you, or actually also for requesting a donation or the like from you. It doesn't move up the chain, so it doesn't look beyond that direct marketer to a person who's gathered information about you. So this legislation is really not about those individuals. This is about the person who's making the telephone call to you and essentially offering the direct marketing. Doesn't mean that you're without protection, because separately, our privacy laws require that if your personal information is processed without your consent, again, an individual who does so can also complain to the information regulator, and likewise a fine could be issued. And the fine in respect of the Protection of Personal Information Act is actually much larger. It's up to 10 million rand. So you can also, using that piece of legislation, go after the relevant individuals who are not marketing to you, but gathering and collecting the data that are used by the marketers. Now, I can almost preempt the question of what's the likelihood of this to be a disincentive towards telemarketers. I think this is going to have to be seen as time unfolds. It is really great to have these kind of protections in both the Protection of Personal Information Act and the CPA. But realistically, some of the onus still sits with us as consumers. We still have to file the complaints and essentially bring forth information for the NCC or the information regulator to act on these sort of issues. So I think some level of activity needs to be seen on the consumer side for these to become real disincentives in the market.
You know, it's very interesting just hearing all of that. I know that for certain types of companies and industries, the fines are almost built into the business into the business model, you know, to say, if there's a fine, we'd rather just pay that but be making more money in whatever our core business is. So it'll be interesting, like you said, to see how that actually plays out, you know, over time. But Ashton, one of the things I was interested in when you were talking was earlier on when you highlighted the fact that one of the pieces of legislation has a somewhat outdated definition of what electronic communication actually is, you know, which sort of has to be unpacked. And when it comes to direct marketing, we keep talking quite a bit about what's going on the phone. But one of the first things you said during this conversation was telephone and other means. Right now, as the legislation stands or as it is being crafted, you know, on these various fronts, whether it's the Consumer Protection Act or whether it's POPI, what are the other maybe mediums that are being protected here? Is it email, social media? Because I can imagine that direct marketers have a number of different channels through which they can target consumers now.
So the real benefit is under the Consumer Protection Act, which is, again, the legislation that's relevant for this preemptive block registry, we have very broad concepts of what we mean when we say direct marketing. So, for example, electronic communication under this act includes telephone, fax, although I don't know who receives spam by fax anymore, SMS, wireless computer access, email, and it also says any similar technology or device. So the idea here being any form of communication to you, including communication by post, would fall under this legislation. What is also important is the form you fill out when you register a preemptive block includes things like your email address, telephone number, and your physical address. So it goes far beyond just telephone calls. It would include your telephone number in respect of use for calls, and I think that would be both telephone line calls, so your ordinary mobile calls, but also your OTT calls, essentially through your OTT providers like WhatsApp or the like, and also preventative on physical mail, so physical spam, to the extent people still receive physical spam, that would also be caught by this. So I guess my short answer to what you're saying is that it's cast very wide, and that's a good thing. I think that essentially if any telemarketer or direct marketer in the general sense has a database of information, they really need to look at that database and compare it to what you registered on the Do Not Call registry and delete essentially all of that information from their relevant databases and then no longer contact you. That would be the proper compliance in terms of the direct marketers.
When it comes to actually making this happen and actually implementing it, I'm sure the policing is one of the things that's going to be the most difficult piece around this. And when I say policing, I just mean actually putting it into practice and actually monitoring and all of that stuff. I think on my side, one of the pieces of the equation that I would anticipate would be difficult is just consumers even knowing that there's a form that they can fill out to be put onto a do not contact registry. That's one. And then two, you know, whether consumers will even have the appetite to engage with such a registry, even if they know about it, because consumers are inundated with admin, right? And some might actually yep. just see this as, oh, this is just more admin that I need to engage in. You know, I couldn't really be bothered that much. It feels like it's, you know, too much friction for what I'm actually trying to do. That's one thing that I would anticipate, but maybe you have a different view of how, of some of the challenges that might come through when it comes to implementation.
I think I completely agree with you on that. I think that to some degree, although this creates empowerment, so individuals can go and register their details and also register complaints when someone's not obeyed the registry, ultimately, these provisions are only as good as people use them. I think ultimately, To some extent, especially with some of the regulatory means available to us, not just in consumer protection, but also under the Protection of Personal Information Act and under some financial regulatory laws, there is a sense of apathy when it comes to enforcement or use of these, or a belief that perhaps, you know, I'm going to be wasting my time because this is not going to be something that is taken forward or taken seriously. Now, I'm hopeful, and I think that this is something that, at least with the trend in 2024, I'm hopeful that the regulators are taking this quite seriously, to the extent that I think that there will be some example cases made of some specific aggregated companies that do telemarketing. And in doing so, those should hopefully bring down not all of direct marketing, but at least the quantity of direct marketing. So what I mean by that is that if you really go look at the top offenders, so to speak, it's going to be a short list. It'll be certain aggregated telemarketing companies or the like in a specific number of industries, and actually can call out those industries. So we'll all actually, and I'm sure you'll also, this will resonate with you. It's the insurance industry. It's the financial services industry. It is debt collector industry. And then only a small proportion is the broader telemarketing. You know, those industries are going to have to really rethink how they do marketing and where they spend their marketing spend, because I think there will be some example compliance notices issued against the larger ones of them over time, and you just need a few complaints for the regulator to pursue those. So I think that the effect there hopefully will be that with that small amount of critical mass and a big reduction in the nodal centralized telemarketers, we should hopefully see a reduction in the quantity of direct marketing. Will we ever see full compliance and absolutely no more spam calls? I think that's pretty unlikely. I think that is something that will be very, very hard to achieve, and wasn't achieved in other countries. So another point to make clear is this is not a novel concept. Various other countries around the world already have these kinds of registries. In fact, South Africa is pretty late to the game in establishing its. We've had it in the law since 2008, but we've waited way too long to put into practice. Other countries like Australia, they have a do not call register. Canada has a national do not call list. New Zealand has a name removal service. And the United States has a national do not call registry. So a lot of countries have had this in the past, and we can look at the data of how they've been successful or not successful in terms of implementing this. And I will say this as an important anecdote. In the United States, for example, in a few years since implementing their national do not call registry, they saw a reduction in the amount of spam calls per month from about 30 per individual to 6, which I think is a meaningful reduction. So I think to some extent we'll have to be pragmatic as to what we see as the benefit of these kinds of amendments.
Definitely agree with you there. And I think the example that you've just given about what's happened in the US from 30 to 6 for each individual, that's an encouraging sign, because that's at least an 80% drop in terms of, you know, the activity. But like what you said, it's unlikely ever going to be perfect. You know, some of these things will continue to slip through the cracks. The fact that direct marketing is so pervasive and continues to do what it does means that, you know, somewhere in the matrix of how companies are spending their money, they see it as a worthwhile, you know, channel through which they can actually get consumers or customers to sign up for whatever it is that they are on selling. Ashlyn, before we let you go, I'm keen to get your thoughts around enforcement, actually, in South Africa. We've been talking about enforcement for the last few minutes, the fines, the different parties that you can go after and all of that stuff. What do you make of specifically the information regulator? Because when it comes to Poppy, that's been the body that has been doing a lot of the heavy lifting when it comes to enforcement. I remember a few years ago when they first started, and that body was first established and the act actually came into effect, there was a lot of thoughts around whether or not they would have any teeth But we have seen them coming out swinging around the likes of Meta and all of that stuff. And then when it comes to consumer protection, at least you've got an established track record, of the various bodies that already exist, on that front. But when it comes to specifically these privacy electronic, type of things, what do you make of the information regulator's ability to enforce the teeth that it has, so to say?
I will say that this year has been one of those years that's been very encouraging in respect of the information regulator's, I think, willingness and ability to bare its teeth in respect of enforcement. I think the information regulator has been extremely proactive in 2024, especially around direct marketing. And I think to some extent is signaling to the market that this is something that is going to be taken seriously. And there's going to be a policy drive, both in terms of lawmaking, but also and important to what you're saying, the enforcement of those laws going forward. The information regulator under Poppy has already issued compliance notice to date to a large telemarketer in respect of direct marketing. So it's not something that they haven't done before. And I think that from recent communications and events where the information regulator has spoken, I think we're definitely going to be seeing this as an area of increased interest. And as a result, and in order to demonstrate their performance, increased enforcement. So I think we should be expecting to see more compliance notices, both in respect of Poppy, but eventually if these amendments do get adopted in terms of these amendments. And I think last but not least, we should be expecting a significant shift in the industry as a result, because the industry up till now has not had a regulator as focused on direct marketing as we do in 2024. So I think this is going to be a rapidly shifting industry going to the future, and one where businesses do need to rethink their models of compliance.
All right, great. So that's how we wrap up today's discussion, just around what's happening in the world of direct marketing and telemarketing, some of the amendments that are coming, to the various acts, and also some of the ways in which some of those new laws are going to be enforced, around telemarketing, around the way in which companies get in touch with people. Also understanding some of what's going on. I do understand that right now the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition has proposed these amendments, and then people do have until, I believe, it's mid-January to actually go out and for stakeholders to submit their comments on the proposed amendments. But from what Ashlyn is saying, if we are to get this over the line, then it could possibly move the needle on the state of telemarketing right now. And also, if other countries, some of the examples he gave is, I think, countries in the US from 30 to 6 calls, per individual, since enforcement of their own registries of this kind. So we hope that similar results can happen in a country like South Africa. Also giving us some insight into incentives. What are the incentives on the various sides of this particular problem? Who stands to benefit, who stands not to benefit, and are we actually going to see consumers being able to actually take this on? Do they see it as extra admin, or do they actually say, okay, fine, I want to register on one of these do not call me type of registries? We wait to see how all of that happens. Also giving us some insight into some of the discussions that are being had around around the different definitions of certain words, such as what is electronic communication. But one of the things that he says is that that's one of the best things about the approach that the policymakers and regulators have taken, is that a number of these things are being read together with other acts. Today we're talking quite a bit about the Consumer Protection Act, but there's also the Poppy Act. And when you read some of these things together, then you are able to find leeway and actually move forward on actually making this happen. I believe that Ashlyn called it the 1-2 punch. So that's been it. We were in conversation with Ashlyn Perumo, who is a partner in the Mergers and Acquisitions Department over at Baker McKenzie South Africa. Ashlyn, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, and great to be here, Madhya.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.